is another argument we've been having.
Okay. I wouldn't listen to us for an hour. No. And I like us. I am looking it up now.
So, Andrew.
Yes, Heather Marie?
You've written, what, 12.5 articles about the Rito Awards.
Are we counting the ones from beforehand as well?
Sure. Yeah. 23.25 articles.
Are we counting live interviews?
43.75. So the question is, after all of that, what did you really think of the Rito Awards?
That's always your question. I thought, okay, this is the thing. I found myself doing this almost unconsciously as soon as the awards ceremony finished. And you might have been there for some of it. Was basically reviewing the event itself. Because it is a theatrical event.
People work very hard to make sure that it is.
I know. People work very hard to make sure that it is. Also, if you get that many professional theater people together and they put on anything, it's going to be theatrical in some sense. It may be stereotypical, but yeah, when you get that many people from both sides, but particularly from the Francophone side, it's going to have lots of glitz and glamour and bling and fawns and satyrs and things running around.
Yes.
And toadstools.
Yes.
I have captioned the toadstool in every picture in which it appears.
Yes. So let me ask you this.
But I found myself reviewing it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, being like, it was better than last year. Not that last year was bad by any stretch of the imagination. But it was, but this was, really, I liked the venue. I liked the feeling of it. It was both intimate and it felt like everyone was there, you know?
Right.
Whether or not there are actually any seat fillers.
Right.
Yeah.
No, I mean, that is the huge benefit of what it is becoming, is that it's really an industry event.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some debate amongst the organizers around the idea of how far of a reach an event like this can have. You know, how much of the quote-unquote general public can you attract to an event like this? For me, I like to set that aside because one of the things that I like about it is that it is an industry event.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like about having an awards program is embracing the fact that we have enough professional theater that we can call ourselves an industry.
Mm-hmm.
We can gather together for one night and all dress up and mingle and do all of that. So this is the other thing, and this is what I want to ask you, is if you ask the people who are on the steering committee, they will all tell you it's not about the awards, it's about the French and English theater communities coming together. It's celebrating the work that everybody does,
mm-hmm.
and hopefully in some way facilitating the growth of that work by having everybody network.
Right, right.
So my question is, does that come across? Is it really not about the awards? How much are the Rito Awards about the awards?
A certain portion of that. It's very interesting that you bring up. Is it or is it not something that is appropriate to or would appeal to the general public? I'd like to answer your question before we get to that, but I have a full answer for that, and I think I have enough empirical evidence to go on. It comes across very clearly, and it's not as forced as it could be. In Ottawa at least, we've probably all been to a museum, you know, a Crown Corporation, or some kind of tour where everything was done in English and French. It's done in English Something is said in English, puis la même chose c'est dit en français tout à fait après. And everything is repeated twice. Like, all of our laws are drafted down two sides of a sheet of paper, one in English, one in French.
Yes.
Here, that wasn't the case. It didn't feel, I don't know who wrote the script.
Pierre Bro.
And you know I love Pierre Bro. That would explain, I was going to say Pierre Bro read his absolutely perfectly, line for line. But... It's very natural, no, but, and everyone had a little fun with it,
mm-hmm.
which was great, and I think that was awesome. I don't know how Pierre felt about that, but he likes to play, too, so, and we know what the purpose of the event is, but, there wasn't that, breeding chinchillas kind of, we're gonna put the English and the French together in this room, and they're gonna like it. They're going to smile, they're going to grit their teeth, they're actors, aren't they? Most of them. And one of them is going to speak English, one of them is going to speak French, and it's all going to look like we're really happy playing together. No, it really is. It's like, you know, I could be speaking English, I could be speaking French. People like Evo, who are just coming into that, you know, I'm working in French because I want to work in French, I want to try that, I want to... faire bâtir mes connaissances. Unfortunately, to build up knowledge and to build up experience in that comes across really clearly. That's what's happening. And between and yes, the awards are important to a certain degree. The nominations are way more important than the awards, because when you get down to it, you are dealing with. Was this that was really good that I liked a lot better or worse than this, which was really good and I liked a lot?
Yes.
And we are comparing, you know.
Sure.
They're all worthy of recognition. That one set of people gets to bring home, or offsite, an award is great, and it's obviously important, and I think what's key is that the people who brought home awards, by and large, are people who are working on both sides. Who are breaking down the perceived barriers. I mean, Joel Beddoes doesn't even believe in them, practically. He's like, there are these multiple traditions, and, you know, we associate them more with one or the other, but really, they're just multiple traditions, and... They're linked maybe only by connotation to the language. And really, by mixing them is how we get the richest. We're lucky. We're so lucky here to have both of them just right up against each other and in a fairly integrated sense.
Yeah.
So that comes across. General public. I want to get to that.
Yeah.
Because for the purposes... Well, partially for the purposes of transportation. Not that I can't get there by bus and STO, and it was held in Gatineau. Hopefully everyone listening to this will be fairly familiar with the geography of the region. If not, that's what Wikipedia is for. But because I had more than one ticket available to me, I realized that, oh, well, I might as well, you know, A, bring someone with me, and B, bring someone who has some sort of transportation. Which was not self-serving at all, because I mean, it's like, hey, you know, free ticket to what promises to be a great event. But this is a person who's not inside the theater community per se. I'm not going to single her out by name, but and I was really curious as to how she would enjoy the entire thing, not just the party and that, but the ceremony. And she's not. Very francophone, like she doesn't necessarily speak French. She can't, but understands it. And I mean, I'm sitting there. She understood everything, but the Ayatsi joke,
right? Right. Yeah,
that was a great joke. That was and the other light bulb joke that came just before it was great too. for, and I kept asking her about it. I was like, that wasn't boring or anything, was it? Less of a leading question than that. No, she enjoyed a lot, and I think that most people will enjoy that because, again, there is spectacle to it. The people who are presenting and who are doing things are not boring people. They are engaging people. These are people who are either, whether they're in front of the curtain or behind the curtain or in the basement or counting beans, they are, their purpose is to put on a show for people. And this is no less that than anything else is. That's why.
Right.
So.
Yeah. I can tell you, though, because I organized the box office, that it's pretty much a 50-50 split between the comp tickets, the complimentary tickets that include all of the nominees and the presenters and members of the media and VIPs, all of that, and purchase tickets. So basically, for every free ticket that is given to the awards, somebody buys a ticket. And I feel like that makes a lot of sense. That's pretty much the limit of where we are at.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really, as I said, am perfectly happy for this to be an industry event and not something that we are trying to sell as, you know, a fun night for everyone.
No, exactly. You don't want to dilute it.
Right.
But at the same time, I should mention this person is a diehard Company of Fools fan. And I wouldn't have known that either, really. I could have asked, but, that wasn't necessarily something I expected. But anyone who does come in will gain some sort of a background. They will, there's enough information there to see what the state of the art, as it were, is, mm-hmm. but what the state of how things are. I wouldn't want it diluted by making it a big thing where everyone and their uncle comes, but people who are in the least interested or want to know or even are just curious, they're not going to be disappointed.
Right. Well, that's,
I bought
that's
my ticket.
Yes, you did.
I bought my ticket originally. And then, because, I mean, if worse comes to worse, I would like to see that. If suddenly everyone said to me, yeah, we don't like your writing. which could happen. Then I would still want to go.
Right. I think, but you're someone who sees a lot of theater and who is very engaged in it. It's interesting to hear, from your date's perspective, that it is accessible, that it is interesting. Everybody was saying at the party after the ceremony that the ceremony was really great this year. It was kept relatively short. It was entertaining. It was comfortably in both languages, mm-hmm. rather than, like you say, it wasn't forced.
Exactly.
And obviously, it did have something to do with the fact that Pierre Bro wrote the script,
mm-hmm.
that Nat Cannell directed, that there was a deliberate choice as far as the entertainment to have very short pieces performed by the Ottawa Stilt Union. Although maybe we should talk about that.
I was going to talk about. I wasn't going to bring it up. This is the middle of our praise sandwich. I like the Ottawa Stilt Union.
Yeah,
and
me
I'm
going
to compare it to last year too because I like Sanitas, and that's the only. I mean, as a concept in that, and as something that's pretty much the only environment. Outside of like a corporate standpoint, I don't know. I'm going to be able to.
Yeah.
That was my first taste. I knew what they were doing in that, and it was interesting. It was interesting. Did it break the flow a lot because it was long? Of necessity, it is long. And it is process concentrate-y, if that's a word.
Yep, it is now.
It is now. You couldn't have that at a general public event necessarily. Because that is stuff that people in the industry are gonna relate to and that maybe. But it might go over some heads otherwise. But the Ottawa Stilt Unit, who I love. And I really like the fact the third piece they did wasn't a stilt piece.
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing against stilts. That's fine. Doing that on a small stage, like that, is kind of neat. I almost wish I would have sat closer for that, but.
But the content of what they presented, I do love the Ottawa Stilt Union, and I've loved their shows, like the two I think fringe shows of theirs that I've seen. And I think it was a really great idea to bring them into this, exactly because of what you're saying. Playback Theater, which did it last year, just didn't work. And it is a risk, no matter what you bring in, because it's a theater awards show full of theater artists and practitioners.
You can't really pull the wool over anybody's eyes.
They are going to be incredibly critical no matter what. So, you know, you're taking your chances no matter what you choose. This was a good choice because it is a spectacle, which people want and enjoy, and you need something to break up just handing out award after award. Mm-hmm. But just what the...
You didn't like seeing a fairy tear torn apart? Is that what you found, Tommy? Sympathy for the fairy?
It seemed very dark.
That was the great part about it.
Which was unexpected because, the whole evening had this kind of woodland creature fairies theme about it. And there's certain preconceived notions you have about characters on stilts. Maybe it's because you often see them at, you know, say, like, in carnival-type atmospheres. Maybe it's just my own, like, preconceived notions about what kind of positive imagery goes along with
characters. Where in your head you go, stilt, unicycle, fire breather, carny. Right, yeah.
Right? But their little vignettes... told a very disturbing tale about this poor young fairy, I guess, who was probably brutally...
She was assaulted in a number of ways, and then eaten, which is weird.
And then they brought out her clothes and started trying them on.
That was macabre and grim.
And like, then they came out and sang a funeral song.
But it was very funerary. It was great, though. I mean, what do you want from the people who did The Girl Who Was Eaten by the Dark? Hello?
Yeah.
It's, I mean...
It was unexpected.
Again, tragedy is uplifting.
It was unexpected. I'm laughing now, but when I watched it, I was actually deeply disturbed. Because I thought, what am I seeing? Is this really what's happening right now?
Where's the happy ending? No, this is act one? Oh, God. Okay. Yeah.
So that was on the side of the unexpected.
It had a very... Yeah. Felt, You're... European in the way that it's like,
sure,
you know, there's some accordion, there's some real darkness going on here. Is that it? Okay.
But of course, the other huge advantage to their performances is that it's all physical and it transcended language, so it didn't have to be in either English or French. Whereas again, last year the playback theater was an English thing that then had to be translated, which made it twice as long. And do you want to talk about a little bit about the actual awards?
Oh, were any actual awards handed out?
Yeah. Well, okay. See, I guess it's not about the awards. Well,
some of it is about the awards, because I remember looking at them and saying, oh, okay, that's interesting.
Well, yeah. I think, you know, in our last episode, we gave, you know, kind of our picks, and we talked about sort of what we thought would win and what we wanted to win, and, like, we were so way off base. In,
totally.
For
the I said you could listen to it on the way home for comedy.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, okay, so yeah, if we pirated the steering committee and we just threw in all the nominations, but that's not right.
were there any that surprised you, do you think?
That were a surprise? Bear in mind, yes, you said I see a lot of theater. I don't see everything, obviously.
Right, yeah.
So, and somehow I didn't see Swimming in the Shallows. I wish I would have.
I bet you really regret that now.
I regretted it before. I super regret it now. I told Lynn that too, because what I find interesting, and we have probably both had our little private moment of laughter about this. Don't lie, is that it was part of the Arts Court Summer Fling thing, which at the time. Was somewhat of a surprise. I mean, it was the second year that they were trying something like that. Mm-hmm. We were like, okay, well, what's the artistic
impetus
behind this?
Yes.
And all sorts of we've had a number of discussions about this one.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm glad that something came out of it.
Yes. But. We also know, I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why Swimming in the Shallows was part of that summer festival, and we know that it's a piece that Lynn Cox has wanted to do for a long time, and that she has been talking to Joelle about doing for a long time, and the Summer Fling Festival became their opportunity to do it. So it was more that was the story than... Arts Court saying, you know, we want to do Swimming in the Shallows. And you know what I mean? Like, it was kind of the other way
around. But providing the opportunity.
Yes, absolutely.
And that doesn't need to have an artistic impetus behind it.
Yeah, you're right.
Which I think we're getting closer to how can that be of benefit?
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
Because creators need presenters and producers.
That's why there exists the title of producer. Well,
yes.
So I mean, good on hopefully, on Arts Court, good on everyone there.
Yeah. And again, the whole Summer Fling thing, like it was their first year, they were figuring that out. So maybe this whole thing, the whole journey with Swimming in the Shallows, you know, teaches them something about where to go with this, and hopefully they can. Like Linda Balducci very graciously said when they were accepting the Outstanding Production Award, you know, that they want Arts Court to continue to be, like, a valued part of the theater community and be a place where these things can happen. So,
yeah.
This will be a good boost for them. And
well, they've got three resident companies now, so that's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think good things are.
But to have that, to have them win. So we've only had 4 years of the awards. So it's a bit unfair to really point to any trends. But I just have that kind of mind where I want to look at, you know, like what
as
happened.
As long as you've got 2 points, you can make a line, right?
Right. Like it's still a new thing, but. At the same time, you know, before this, we've only had Third Wall and the GCTC win. And I guess you can say this was like an independent production. So we had an independent production win. I guess I could say that, right?
It was produced non-independent. I mean, it was produced
maybe,
in a corporate sense, but the it came together not from a seasonal company.
Yeah,
it was more of an ad hoc.
Yeah.
So
I guess that's more what
it was.
I mean.
A project.
Yeah.
Production, which, in a sense, the creation is independent.
Yeah.
In that sense. So it straddles that.
Yeah.
It straddles that.
So you know what's interesting? If you look at the awards of the last 4 years,
mm-hmm.
every year so far, the production that wins Outstanding Production also wins Best Director.
That's always been the case?
That's always been the case. 2007 was Greek Repercussion Theater, and Kevin Orr directed that. You got the directing nod. 2008, it was Empire Builders, Third Wall, and Joel, was it Joel? Yeah, Joel got the award for directing that. Then 2009 was Syringatree from GCTC, and Lizanne Johnson got the directing award for that.
Oh, that's the one where she accepted on behalf of Lizanne Johnson, who wasn't able to attend, wasn't it? Or was that the year after? Go on.
And 2010, which we just had, was
okay.
Swimming in the Shallows, and Joelle Beddoes, again, won for directing. So this is an interesting little trend, right? And sort of begs the question, like, how do we evaluate the role of the director? We seem not
good
to be able
point.
To separate the production from the work of the director. Those are very closely tied so far in these awards.
Someone said to mentioned to me or passed on a comment that one doesn't necessarily praise the director when the show goes well, but when the show goes badly, it's all the director's fault.
So maybe this is a way of kind of correcting that.
directors
are getting their due a little bit for the shows that were successful and that people really liked.
Yeah. You could say in all performance art, in all art, really, the more invisible the technique, the creator and the things that hold it together, the better the final product. So when you don't notice the direction.
Right. Well, I think that's part of what is so difficult about the job that the jurors have going to these shows is having to draw those imaginary lines compartmentalize these things and try to evaluate them as different parts rather than the whole.
Yeah.
It's not an easy task.
No.
Which is why people say it doesn't really, the awards don't really matter, because how do you really evaluate these things in any kind of systematic way? So, you know, but I'm always about the conversation. So it's always, it always gives lots of fodder for thought and conversation around all these things. So, I like the award. That's what the award part is pretty important to me. And I do think there were a couple of missing names and missing productions.
Of course there were missing names and productions. It wouldn't be an awards show if there weren't.
I mean, I feel that Turn of the Screw and Shadows were both robbed this year.
I think Turn of the Screw was robbed to a great extent. That's my personal feeling on that. But could I say who got it who got the awards that Turn of the Screw should have got? No, I can't say that.
I'm not saying it that way, though.
Shadows, I say wait, because the remount of Shadows was better than the Fringe production. I would hate for Shadows to have been recognized too early.
That's fair. That's fair, and that's a really good point. I guess I'm just looking at it from the perspective of, if I look at the entire year of 2010, and by entire year I really mean the eligible productions in 2010, those two shows were big standout shows for the theatrical year. So that's why I say I feel like they were missing on the list of winners.
Yeah. And they were both, excellent. I mean, really. I am actually surprised that Turn of the Screw didn't win 4 more things. And, But I'm all the more regretful that I didn't see Swimming in the Shallows in the categories where, you know, Turn of the Screw, because Turn of the Screw was so great.
Right.
That, and I mean, it was a hot, sweaty room.
Yeah.
But it was worth being in.
Yeah.
That I will have it, thankfully, etched in my mind forever. And Kate.
Yeah.
I mean, very much missing, possibly for the same reasons that if you do it well, you're not. If you do it that well, it's transparent. I would like that to be the reason, if we can see any reasons, but
yeah. It was also surprising to me that Paul Rainville won in the acting category, for the simple fact, and maybe this points to something else, but Heroes was an ensemble piece. So maybe what this really points to is this lack of an ensemble award. This is debatable, whether or not there should be an award for ensemble work.
But since we've said it before, and there are more and more ensemble casts out there that are recognizable like that, like Femi, for an example of another. We have said it before, and I think we all agree, yes, there should be an ensemble award. There should be an ensemble category.
Because I think it's weird. I think it's weird to...
to single one person out of that, out of those three out, and to not nominate all three for the, and then it's almost like a bridge bid. And Paul is very gracious in recognizing, in basically assigning the award to the ensemble. Which, I mean, hats off to the Capitol Critics Circle for being able to bend their own rules and say, you know what, this really is an ensemble. They are thinking from the same. From the same line that we are.
Yeah.
And it's just big. Well.
Yeah.
They did that, and I think that was.
Yeah. Yeah. So there might be a category missing there. I think there's obviously problems with the adaptation category. I felt like Brian Court's acceptance speech underlined the problems of the adaptation category. So I think there's
that, by the way, that was... Brian's pretty good behind the mic.
He really is.
But that was his best. that was so dry. Because he's difficult. I've spoken with Brian Gordon a number of occasions, right? And until you get to really know his style, you're like, what? Oh, okay. But it's really that dry sense of humor, and it's that quiet, gentle. It took seeing a couple of productions where he was directing to get a sense of his directing style too, and it's like, oh, okay, I know what portion there that I'm seeing. But that was hilarious.
Yeah.
I swear that was great.
Yeah,
that was great. He did well.
I do. Yeah, I agree. Another surprise, I think, would be Six at Home, which, you know, we talked about in the last episode.
We were like,
episode,
oh, I'm only going to get one.
I was saying, you know, like, I think it's great that these guys were nominated, the little show that could. I did not in any way expect them to take both the Outstanding Fringe and the New Creation Award. That was a big surprise. But that's just but this is the thing. For the year that Six at Home wins, why wouldn't Turn of the Screw win? And I'm not, this has nothing to do with them being in the same venue. It has to do
yes,
with...
Yes, it does. Everything has to do with Laurier House. If I mention it every time, you have to mention it every time.
It has to do with the appetite on the part of the jurors for the small... independent show, and you know,
but they were two very different styles. Okay, if we're gonna get into that, Six at Home was practically interaction. I mean, it was fairly interactive. It was set, but it was very raw. It was from when I first talked to Emma about it. It wasn't, not all six of the pieces were finished. One of them was in flux.
Oh, I know.
If she didn't show it on the surface, but she could have been very agitated inside about that, because, you know, it's a fringe show, it has a deadline.
No, you're right. So it's...
Whereas Turn of the Screw was ready-made. I mean, it's been around.
Yeah, no, you're right. So that it...
Not that they didn't do amazing things with it, but... Which
they
did.
They really did.
They did.
And they adapted it to a space. It happens to be the same space, but they used it very differently, so you can't really, you know, compare it in that way. But, you know, you're right. Six at Home was rewarded for their innovation and for doing something with an approach that we don't often see.
Right.
So, yeah.
And it was so far off the beaten track.
Yeah.
But people filled that place every night, I think.
It did? Oh, yeah. It sold out.
And I'm glad it did, because it was... it was fun. It was great. That's
anyway,
sort of
it's very exciting. Like, I'm totally excited for them, and I wish that Emma could have been here for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we know how, you know, how much of her own
she's
sweat
very
and tears and anxiety went into that. So, yeah. She's out in Victoria now, so that's too bad. But
yeah, in case anyone got the impression that she's not with us anymore, no, we mean she's
actually
on the West Coast.
Yes,
which is
doing cool things, I'm sure. What else?
It's too bad they didn't Skype her in. That seems to be the new thing.
Yeah,
we're gonna blame Bob Wiseman for starting that trend.
Right. What else do you want to say about the Rito Awards? Those were my major...
They're, I'll plug Ottawa tonight. They have the whole thing, the whole, ceremony, if you want to, see Pierre Bros' carefully scripted jokes get torn apart by a series of performers.
Yeah.
That,
Yeah, I mean, this is growing too. The interest in covering the awards is growing, which is really nice to see, and that helps the artists who are nominated and who win the awards, and it just elevates the whole scene within the city. So that is fantastic. So yeah, that's great that Ottawa Tonight was there. It's great that you covered the event for 27 publications. and random
next year I'll try to get it into En Route.
You know, and random things happened. Like I did an interview about the Rito Awards for 1310, an AM radio station. That, you know, we're starting to get on people's radars. So.
Hey, look at their demo. I mean, I actually don't know what the 1310 demographic is now, but yeah,
it's getting.
If you listen to AM radio, you're probably in the larger demographic that might attend theater. I hope I haven't offended anybody. yeah, no, it's a good and I think having the event over that side was actually a good idea. Yeah. For one thing, it permits them to serve to people over the age of 18 instead of over the age of 19.
Oh, I didn't even think about
that. It didn't occur to me until I got there, and I'm like, oh.
Was there anyone actually that young there?
I don't know. There were some people who look pretty young. I also call the Rito Awards the one night where Anglophones dress up like Frank. Because, you know, everyone really does break out their stuff. Even people wearing jeans, you know, have that joke that don't show up in jeans unless you are a Francophone director or playwright.
Yes.
But no, anyone, if you can pull off the style with it, it's people expect there to be a whole spectrum, right?
Yeah.
And it's nice that there is. This is the thing. It may be an industry event, but it's not an exclusion.
No.
It's not an exclusionary event. It's not exclusive.
No, I don't think so. No,
it's very inclusive. I didn't see Maybe it happened, but I didn't see anyone going into the bathroom and gnashing their teeth and crying and gagging themselves with a washcloth if they didn't win or if they weren't nominated. No, everybody was happy and enjoying themselves and there to celebrate, really, the whole community.
Yeah, it is fun to see everyone dressed up, isn't it?
And let me just say, that we don't see these people in costume, but
there are so many good-looking Francophone theater people. Wow. Although, I kept saying that night, and
did I get you in trouble then?
And a very smart friend of mine said that it wasn't that they were better looking or that there were more better looking Francophones. It's just that I'm too used to the Anglophones.
Yeah.
So I don't appreciate their beauty as much as I do the strangers who I'm seeing.
So. Interesting way of putting it. But yes, there is a certain beauty and novelty.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Sure. It's definitely reflected in the awards themselves. Oh my. Yeah. We have to wait a whole year? For the 5th? And it'll be the 5th! I love that. Milestone.
Yeah. And we're already talking about all sorts of ways to celebrate that, so. Okay, well, I did also do up my little list of best dressed, if you want to hear it.
I'd love to. I've only heard Kevin's so far. Kevin Reed.
Victoria. Oh, The Visitor.
Yes, The Visitor.
I put The Visitor on my list.
Well, I should hope so.
Of best dress.
This is like Cats Crushes.
No, it's not, because I didn't put it in any order, and I didn't, I, you know what I did? I just, like, I thought, who can I remember looking fabulous? That's how I did my list. Like, the ones that kind of stood out in my memory, obviously Annie LeFave.
But always.
Always, I know. But those fantastic wings, and when she was on stage, I mean, Alan looks super cute with the little tiny wings.
Yes.
And the two of them together, and the way they were lit from behind while they were on the stage was absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
Annie is so gorgeous.
And they had good chemistry.
They do have good chemistry. Yeah. And Alan Neal is so great about coming back every year, and he likes us.
It's not like the theater community tortures him or anything.
Yeah. So that's cool. That was good. Anna Chambers had that fantastic dress that her mom made that was totally Oscar worthy. She looked stunning.
Anna always dresses well, though. I have not seen her at anything where I'm not looking over and it's like the yellow tights or anything. She has style. And
she does have style. And not only that, she has very strong opinions about style. So have a conversation about that sometime.
Okay.
Kelly Rigoli and Kari Leslie,
Kari's jacket.
But I think Kari and Kelly, if I'm not mistaken, both had the strapless, somewhat short dresses. They were both rocking those.
Yes.
They both looked amazing. Kari is another one who's kind of a young style icon. She always wears, if she chooses her clothing very carefully, it's always unique and interesting, and she has an individual style. She looked really good. Judy Pearl looked so beautiful and embraced the theme of the evening, but also she looked so beautiful because she also looked so happy.
Yeah, she looked happy. She looked natural.
Yeah,
like it wasn't. You've hit it there.
And I was so happy to see her happy.
I expected to see a Midsummer Night's Dream break out around her.
It's true. Yeah, so she made my list. I also thought Jan Irwin looked really good.
Yeah.
That, you know, when I talk about stylish ladies in the theater community. She's definitely high on the list. I put you and your nameless date on the list.
I'm already in enough trouble for not introducing her with her full name.
I thought you both looked really great, and especially because you had those beautiful corsages that your mom made. They were
on the spur of the moment,
they were
too.
But they were so meticulously beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's a lot of that in me.
That was nice. That was a really nice touch. You guys looked really good together, like very picture perfect.
Thank you. I'm not paying Heather Marie to say this. For one thing, I'm too cheap.
Will Summers, I also put on my list.
Yeah.
But that guy's just handsome. And again, it's like somebody who has...
I agree.
Somebody who has style. You know, whenever you see him, he's...
Part of it's just the eyes.
Yeah, dude's handsome. Oh my god.
Speaking of which, Al. I hope Al's on your list.
He isn't, but he should be.
I liked his hair.
He actually did look really good and surprised everybody by showing up at the Rito Awards with zero facial hair. Even surprised me, because when I left the house that night, he still had a mustache. He had shaved his beard off the night before, but he still had a mustache. And then he walked in, and I actually didn't recognize him, you know, because I was at the front entrance at the box office there. And I kind of looked up and technically saw him, but looked back down and kept doing what I was doing because it didn't register that was my husband standing in front of me. Because he looks totally different with no facial hair. He looks way younger and different. But yeah, he looked good. There's no denying it. He looked good.
Yeah, no, he did. He looked like an evangelist, and I would have bought anything he was selling. All there needed was an organ off to the side. If he would have been wearing my pink shirt, he would have been Reverend Lovejoy. that is exactly where it was.
I put Lisa LaRue on my list because she looks stunning
in
blue.
Yeah,
that is such a great color on her.
That is dangerous. Yeah,
she's a good looking woman, and I think that night was the first.
Yeah, John looked great too. He was
doing that
Buddy Holly, rocking that.
Yeah,
they look good together.
They certainly did, and yeah. I think that was the first time that I've ever really seen Lisa cut loose on the dance floor. Girl can move.
Oh my god! Yeah.
So she's good looking and she can move. Yeah, definitely on the best dressed list. And then I also, of course, put our own Tanya Levy on the list.
She looked good.
She looked really elegant and really good. Yes. Yeah, everything was in the right place.
Everything was in the... Yes, Tanya wasn't missing any bits, is that what we're saying?
No, she was just well put together.
Okay.
She looked really good.
No, she did. She did.
Yeah.
I thought you looked good. When I came in, I almost didn't recognize you. And I see you fairly often. Usually it's first thing in the morning. But
yes. And I always dress up for you when you come to record the podcast. So.
Yeah. We are both dressed in 1993. That is.
Are we?
Oh, come on. We could totally, we could totally put on, never mind.
I'm sure I'm far too young to understand what you mean by that, but go on.
I am sure you are, too. It would be retro
for you. That's right.
But, no, and that scarf, and you looked appropriate for the job. Well, for the job and for... I walk around with all sorts of stereotypes about what Francophones look like and what Anglophones look like. Because I've been brought up with them, and you looked like you belonged in La Maison Citoyenne in Gatineau. But at the same time, I love that scarf. That scarf is... Oh, it's good. It's good.
That's a very nice comment.
It's very simple. But it's very good. Oh, can you tell that we want to be back there?
Oh no, I'm glad it's done, and because it's a lot of work, and we move on now. We move on, and that's the thing. Like, the Reno Awards is something that never ever stops. Right?
Right.
There are jurors going to see shows all the time.
Don't remind them.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's probably enough of our silliness. There is one more thing that we wanted to do in this episode.
Counts as news, although by the time it comes out.
I actually forgot about that, but yeah, we can say that. In our last episode, we were talking about the new GCTC season, and I had said that both Chris Joseph and Jesse Buck were confirmed cast members for A Midwinter's Dream Tale, the show that Company of Fools is doing at the GCTC next season. And shortly after I made that statement on the podcast, we learned that Chris Joseph actually isn't going to be in the show. So just as a correction to that information, he won't be in it. But it does open up the opportunity for another actor.
We are not announcing auditions. We're not on that line at all. But...
Well, it's true, right? It's the positive way of looking at it.
It is the positive, and it's not because he's run off or set fire to anything, or because he's had a falling out with Company of Fools, or if it is, I don't know about that. But it's because he is doing something else.
It is because he's doing something else. Yeah. I mean, he's in high demand, and
yeah,
it's
we can't even keep him in the city.
I know, yeah, and it's sad because he was really. I mean, I loved him so much in that show that I'm sad that he won't be reprising that role. But, you know, these things happen. Life goes on.
Yeah.
It's never the same show twice anyway, exactly. Even if you do have the same actors. So there we go.
The Company of Fools is something that is really always evolving over time anyways, too. So
it's... Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's that. But the other thing we're going to do in this episode is bring you an interesting conversation. It's not a conversation. An interview would be a better word for it. With a fascinating young lady making theater in this city. Her name is Ekaterina Shastakova. I've probably pronounced
that. That's actually not bad, I think.
She is 23 years old.
She's 23? Wow.
Yeah. And she's this incredibly accomplished young woman who I learned about initially through social media and through Twitter. Through
Chloe Ecker? And that line, or?
Well, a couple of people wrote blog posts, Wayne Curran and Nadine Thornhill, about going to Once Upon a Kingdom shows, which put the company on my radar, because I went, who is this doing children's theater in the city?
I went with Wayne, and it was, if you want to hear, yeah, that was fine.
Right, so... Katerina, or Katya, is the artistic director of Once Upon a Kingdom. They have been producing children's theater in Russian. Katya is Russian. She moved to Canada when she was 17.
So not that long ago.
Not that long ago.
17 and 23.
Yes.
Yeah, yes. Okay.
And in that time, she has... So she's completed the theater program at Ottawa U. The entire time she was in university, she was also running her own company, working in Russian, teaching theater to kids, and directing shows, and doing that all in Russian. She knew English when she moved here, but, you know, had to become more comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
She is now, not only, fluent in English and Russian, but has recently learned French because, she's passionate about working in theater in Ottawa and is very excited by the French theater that is happening in Ottawa. And
I'm not surprised, having seen the nature of what she's putting together.
And she wanted to be able to understand that, and she's recently been accepted into the master's directing program at Ottawa U. Good. And you don't have to be totally bilingual, I don't believe, to be in that program. You do have to get through the interview partially in French. So you have to have some ability with the French language. But she took that on and started taking, full-time French courses. And she's just an incredibly ambitious young woman with very strong ideas about theater and, things that she wants to do. And I've just been so totally impressed by her. So I'm really excited to be able to share with people, anybody who hasn't, heard about this company or knows, they are now, Once Upon a Kingdom is now starting to work in English. They have a show coming out.
They have something coming out, which I'm very excited about.
The Little Prince, which will be at the Natalie Stern Studio at the Ottawa School of Speech and Drama. And the reason they've started to work in English is because she wants to work with more professional actors. Her aim is to run a totally professional theater company with a focus on children's theater, but there aren't enough professional actors in Ottawa who speak Russian. So she couldn't continue to work exclusively in Russian. It's fascinating. It's all very fascinating. Yeah. I will totally be following this young lady's career, and I'm totally psyched to share this this interview that I did with her weeks ago. So we thought that we would kind of end off the episode with the interview. Mm. So.
Yeah.
You've been listening to Ottawa Theatre Confidential.
We have an email address.
OttawaTheatreConfidential@gmail.com. And thanks very much for listening.
We appreciate it.
Please send us your feedback. We love to hear from you.
Even if it's threats.
Thanks for being here, Andrew.
Thank you for having me, Heather Marie.
and now we'll leave you with Ekaterina Shostakova.
Ekaterina Shostakova. Well, my whole theater life started when I was 7. And at that time, I lived in Russia, St. Petersburg. I started making theater already in Russia. So I started my own theater studio for children when I was grade 10. When I was third year at university, I started my own theater company. And that's where it's all like the big work started.
Okay, so this time you do it. Think about what we talked about last time. And in particular, think about connection more. I want to see connection, because last time it wasn't quite there. So more find ways when you look at each other, and when you're looking away, when you're looking at the stars or the sun or something else.
Our mandate is that we're trying to so that we produce shows that are equally interesting for children and for adults. So we're trying to create those several levels on understanding and perception for the audiences. So it's not only children who enjoy the shows, but adults as well. So there is some philosophy. Usually we try to choose the plays and or stories that are more philosophical. So we try to make people think, and not only which is great, but so not only enjoy the show just from seeing it, but also so you go home and think about it.
Well, then you shall pass judgment on yourself. That is the hardest thing of all. It is much harder to judge yourself than to judge others. If you succeed in judging yourself, it is because you are truly a wise man.
So it started 2008. We started rehearsals for our first production, which was Two Maple Trees. It started as a Russian theater company because there was a great niche for this. There is no Russian theater company here in Ottawa, and there was a need, so people were talking about it. I was very involved in the community, so I felt that we should do that. So we did the first production. It's written by Eugene Schwartz, who is a very, very good playwright, Russian playwright. So we chose a good material, which was beneficial. But it was a huge production. It was 3 acts and 12 actors. And so it was lots of work. We worked for 5 months, and I was actually training people because they didn't know a lot about theater. It was I just got my friends and people who came to the auditions, but they're all Russian speakers. So after I graduated, now I'm by myself. There's no support from university right now. So we keep doing shows. So right now we're working on The Little Prince.
Ah, here is a subject.
How do you know who I am if you've never seen me before?
All men are subjects.
Do the stars obey you?
They obey me immediately, of course. I tolerate no insubordination.
Theater people, they tend to try to make you frightened of the theater life because it's very hard to survive there. There is no money in that. It's just your passion that drives you forward, and that's it. It's very hard life in theater. So they try to find all the possible ways to scare you away and say, that's not what you should do. You have no talent. You have nothing. Just go do something else. And those people who overcome this, they really become the ones in theater. So that's probably a reason why the theater is pretty good there. It's different. In Russia, it's very psychological theater, psychological, pretty. I think that's the word for that. And here, you cannot generalize what is going on in the country. People are still looking, what's the Canadian theater, how it looks like. And there is not that many, because I'm interested in theater for the young audiences. It's not very strong tradition yet, unfortunately, around Canada. It's growing, it's developing, but it's very young theater. So it's good in the way that there is lots of space for experimentation. In Russia, it's very you have a director who is the god of the certain theater company. He's doing everything, and you cannot, like, if you get into the company, you do as he wants, and there is no way you're gonna experiment. And so, and here it's free. You can do whatever you like, and it's good in a way that you can try things, but at the same time, there is lack of tradition. I found that there is not enough theater. At first it was very hard to see what's really going on here. I find it's pretty common. Okay, I think everyone is talking about this, that it's pretty conservative theater, and it's very frustrating that it's mostly seniors who go to theater, not totally, but there are many of them. So the question is, what's the future?
We had this theory at one point about green halls. Is there a culture that has a thing?
I don't think we can get into that on this podcast, but I believe I belong to that culture.